Here we are. It's that time. Arthur Schwartz, the food mensch, ready as ever. Hey, Arthur, how are you?
I am cozy.
Great word.
It really is very cold. And right now, everything is glazed with ice, so I wouldn't go out anyway. But on top of all that, the elevator in our building is out of order, and not just out of order, but missing a part that needs to be apparently manufactured. Anyway, so I was prepared. Before all this started, the bad weather on Friday, I called my trusty butcher, who is also a great Italian grocer, and also carries some really good fresh produce, reliably good. I don't even have to look at it to know it's going to be good, namely red peppers and zucchini. He always has great red peppers and zucchini, and also somehow manages to find whatever sweet cherry tomato there is, he's got it. Plus, I have to say, the prices are about half the price of most places for all these things. In any case, I bought some shoulder lamb chops, which we usually love, just plain, just, you know, grilled. However, as we get older, we have some dental issues. And lately, we're not wanting to chew chewy meat very much. So I decided, instead of doing my usual plain lamb chops, I'll get to that in a minute, because not everybody has our dental issues, I'm going to make them oreganata. Now, that is more or less braised in the oven. Really easy, easy, easy recipe that I learned many, many years ago. Cooking along with, I don't even really remember who it was. I think it was one of Cecilia's sisters. And she made a whole, a baby lamb cooked this way. And it was such a small lamb that it fit into one large roasting pan, the whole, cut up into parts. I didn't have to watch that being done. It had already been done. Anyway, I got home and I wanted to reproduce this dish, and I went to the supermarket to buy some lamb, and it was just coincidentally, fortuitously, it was a lot of lamb parts were on sale, so I bought a whole bunch of different lamb parts, and I decided to cook it all together like my friend did, and I still do it. Got to say, I haven't done it in a while. Because I do like plain grilled lamb chops, but I'm going to do it today, and I've done it a zillion times before. So I have these four really nice, I would say half-inch thick-ish, nice thick shoulder lamb chops. You're going to ask me, do you want the blade bone or the round bone? It doesn't matter. I just looked, and the butcher sent me two blade bone and two round bone. So, next week maybe I can tell you if there was a difference, but I have a hunch. By the time I finish with these, you won't know the difference. In any case, because they're very well cooked, put a little bit of oil in the bottom of a baking pan, roasting pan, that will fit your lamb pretty much in one layer. It could overlap a little bit here or there. It doesn't matter. It won't matter in the end. But a commodious pan. Put a little oil in the bottom. Salt and pepper your lamb pieces, whatever they are. Mine are going to be these shoulder chops. Season them well with salt and pepper. And these days, by the way, when I grill meat, I usually have thought ahead enough to salt the meat a couple of hours at least before cooking it. And you'll see that right off some juices will come to the surface, but then they go back in, and you end up with meat that's seasoned more thoroughly than if you just sprinkle the salt on before you cook it. But you can in this case. So put that in the pan, the pieces of lamb. I'm going to have these four chops. And on top of that, put an onion sliced. Now, small onions, medium onion, not too large an onion. You don't need a whole lot of onion. I would say for my four chops, one medium onion is going to be more than enough. And scatter the slices, you know, the half moon slices over the meat. And on top of the onion, put, I would say, one canned tomato per chop. In my case, I'm going to see. It's going to be about a half a 28-ounce can of tomatoes. I will crush each tomato in my hand as I put it on the chop, four tomatoes. And then a good amount of oregano. It is called oreganata, or al forno, you could say, baked. So I don't know. Could be even a tablespoon of dry oregano scattered over the whole thing. If I have rosemary, I divide my herb between oregano, let's say 2 teaspoons of oregano, and a couple, whatever, sprigs of rosemary. Put that all in. Salt and pepper again. Now you're doing it on top of the tomato and onion. And you put that in a 400—drizzle with a good amount of olive oil. Now, my friends in Italy use a frightening amount of olive oil. I would say a couple tablespoons is probably enough because you already put a little bit at the bottom of the pan, and the meat, of course, has its own fat. Now, let's say 3 tablespoons, to be generous. And put that in a 400-degree oven. And after about a half an hour or so, maybe 40 minutes at 400 degrees, you want to take the pan out and flip the meat around a bit. Make sure you get some of the onion and tomato back on top of the meat. And this is going to have to cook, I would say, turning it at least one more time for a good 2 hours, all close to 2 hours. In the end, you want the meat to be fork tender, and the onion, tomato, and the fat from the meat and the oregano all forms a kind of sauce. Now, if we're being good and not eating pasta, which is always a treat, I would just serve all that stuff as a sort of sauce, but it's really more condiment than sauce. It's not really liquid, with each a bit of meat. However, what I really like to do is just to take a little bit of those goodies out of the pan, and with the rest of what's in the pan, you can add some pasta and dress pasta. So you've made basically 2 courses out of these baked lamb chops. I have to say, my mouth is watering as I am talking about it because it is really delicious. And I would use ziti for this, penne, ziti, tubular pasta. Rigatoni is too much pasta. Smaller than rigatoni, tubular pasta. Or something that at least it's going to catch. Not, you know how I was going to say to catch all the goodies, but the fact is, spaghetti is very good here, too. And what you do is you cook your pasta separately, of course, in as you normally would. And don't throw away the pasta cooking water. You may want to use it now. And take the pasta out and put it in the pan with all the pan drippings and onion tomato goodie. And toss it over some heat for a little bit. And, of course, you want to serve this with some grated cheese. And because it's a lamb dish, pecorino would be appropriate. But if you're not a pecorino person, don't worry. Parmigiano is good, too. So that really is a treat dish for us. Going to have a vegetable with that. I'm not sure what I'm going to have as a vegetable with that. I have some different things. I would like something green, to be honest. Anyway, so that's what one of the things I stocked up on so that I didn't have to go out in the snow, but now I can't go out, period.
How did you say about a half inch thick for the lamb?
Yeah, my chops are about a half an inch thick.
Okay.
And they're going to, at 400 degrees, turning them a couple of times at least, maybe 3 times even, they're going to take a good an hour and a half to 2 hours. It's tough meat. You know, you want it to get really tender. So the whole point of braising, and this is braising weather, is to get some good caramelization kind of flavor from the surface of what you're braising, but then cook it, because it's going to be a tough cut, until it's tender. Now, chief among these braised dishes. It's pot roast. What pot roast is nothing but braised whatever. In my case, I like to buy a very large, meaning at least 3 pound, chuck roast. And to me, that's the ideal pot roast. And I do very little with that, by the way. Just brown it. Takes about, you want to get a smoking hot cast iron pan. And then it takes about 4 minutes. You're going to salt the meat before you cook it. And then it's going to take about 4 minutes per side to get a really good crust on it. And in the same pan, you could take the meat out now, and in the same pan, put in your whatever braising vegetables you're going to have. Could be carrots, celery, onion, the usual. You could throw in some parsnips, I like in that, if you like a sweet gravy in the end. And then put the meat back in. I often don't have an open bottle of wine. You know what I prefer? Guinness. And I sort of always have Guinness in the house. So a combination of Guinness and some beef broth could even be, beef bouillon. That only comes up, I would say, halfway up the side of the meat, three-quarters of the way up the side of the meat, not totally covering the meat, because you want the exposed part to get even browner. That's it. Put it in. In this case, I put it in the oven at a low temperature, like 250 degrees, covered, and it takes a good 3 hours, and it'll be unbelievably fork tender. I don't know what to call that other than pot roast. I was thinking about this earlier, and I remembered that my grandmother, my paternal grandmother, who cooked more American, I would say, than my other grandmother, although my other grandmother was also born in New York, but she cooked more old-fashioned. Rosie used to make Yankee pot roast. Now, I wish I'd known to ask her at that time, what makes it Yankee?
Right.
Have any ideas about that? I'm not sure what makes it Yankee pot roast. But to her, Yankee pot roast was a braised brisket with a sauce based on ketchup. Maybe that's what made it Yankee.
Yeah.
Not a bad flavor profile from ketchup. It's that sweet and sour flavor that Eastern European Jews love. So that wasn't so Yankee, but that was what she called Yankee pot roast. But I do make, I have to say, something that is more old-fashioned along the same lines, and that's sweet and sour flanken. Now, the most important thing with making anything braised is what meat you're cooking. So flanken, I think this is interesting. Flanken is short ribs cut against the bone so that you end up with slices of meat and a lot of fat with several bones, several little pieces of bone along one side. This meat, now always to me known as flanken and used widely in Eastern European Jewish cooking, I mean, we never had broth, for instance. My grandmother would not start a soup with broth, but she would put in a piece of flanken to give it a little beef flavor, I mean, along with all the other ingredients. Anyway, flanken is now very popular and known as Korean short ribs. Are you aware of this?
Yes.
The Korean dish galbi is flanken. Now, the Koreans, being very clever people and certainly clever cooks, marinate the flanken. Usually, they don't tell you this, usually with some ingredient that tenderizes the meat. So in this way, you can grill the meat. And essentially, we know teriyaki, it's a soy-based, soy sauce with a sweetener and blah, blah. Could be ginger, garlic, whatever. That is what galbi is, except that the meat is particular, and the meat is short ribs, or what I would call flanken. And I make it sweet and sour, and you're going to laugh. This recipe, by the way, is in my Jewish cookbook, Arthur Schwartz's Jewish Home Cooking.
Which is on
this
my
was
list.
Something I modeled after an old-fashioned recipe because I don't make my own tomato sauce in this recipe. I use the little cans of Heinz tomato sauce. That was, by the way, probably one of the very first kosher ingredients in the supermarket, because Heinz did have the very first, which is to say ketchup, and then came the vegetarian beans that was also approved by the kosher powers that be, and this sauce, because every Jewish kitchen I ever cooked in used this, Heinz tomato sauce. And, you know, it's a good product, actually. But what I do is I brown the meat, I brown the pieces of flanken, and then I braise it in a combination of canned tomato sauce with just a little bit of brown sugar added for sweetness. I got to do. I don't make this very often because of the sugar content. And then I use something called sour salt, which is actually citric acid crystals, to make it sour. And so, that's it. You put it in a low oven and you let it cook away until the meat is literally falling off the bone. Bob loves this. I mean, it's one of his favorite things, the sweet sour flanken. And I must say that it makes me want to make it again. I haven't done it in a while because of the sugar, obviously. And what do you serve this with? Well, we always had it with kasha. And flanken, you know, I mean, galbi, you eat with Korean condiments tucked into lettuce leaves. I like doing that, by the way. But that's different meat. It's grilled meat. And anyways, as I was saying, it depends on what meat you get. For instance, you know, when people say, oh, I'm making a brisket, what are they making? They're making pot roast.
Right.
They're making a piece of braised meat. Happens to be this nice, tough but fatty cut of meat that renders delicious meat in the end. But anyway, so it's braising. I'm even going to braise, by the way, speaking of braising, I'm even going to braise some red peppers, meaning this is something called peperonata, or if you want to translate that, a mess of peppers. I will saute a sliced onion and I have really good red peppers here. By the way, you can get very good red peppers right now from Mexico. Just remember, they sort of invented the pepper. So they know how to do it. Anyway, these are very good peppers. I'll cut them into strips, and after the onion wilts a little bit, I'll add the peppers with a nice amount of olive oil, and toss them around in the hot oil. And then I will add some crushed tomatoes, cover salt, pepper, cover the pot, let it simmer gently until the peppers are very nice and tender. If you want less liquid in the pot, uncover the pot at a point so that you can get some evaporation. And at the very end, you can stir in some torn basil leaves. I happen to have some nice basil here, so I'll do that. And you can eat that as is, as a vegetable, or as part of an antipasto spread, for instance. Or you could use it as a topping for toast, otherwise known as bruschetta. Makes really good toast. If you're into making your own pizza, it's a great pizza topping. But we eat it for its own sake mostly. Sometimes as a side dish to scrambled eggs.
Oh,
we're big on scrambled eggs around here.
Yeah, scrambled eggs, eggs, cheese, meat, all have vitamin K. Vitamin K makes calcium go to the right places rather than the wrong places.
Okay, after 60 years of reporting and writing about nutrition and food, I'll tell you, nothing has changed. It's all about variety and moderation.
Correct.
And actually, I have a trainer now, and he knows better than to tell me what to eat. But I asked him what he eats, and he said something very interesting and true, which is if you have many different colors on your plate, you're getting your nutrition. And I recall way back when, the beginning of my life practically, I had a friend named Mo Lebowitz. And Mo was an artist, graphic designer, famous by the way. And at an early point in his career, actually, he gave up corporate design jobs and went home and started his own business, which gave him the opportunity to make and eat lunch every day. You know, if you're, you know, a lot of people just eat something at their desk. Well, that was not Mo. He wanted to have a real meal in the middle of the day. And I went shopping with him, you know, for the food sometimes. And it was always by color. Listen, we have red. Now we need some yellow. Now we need some green, more green, you know, like that. And the fact is, the colors tell you that they have some unique nutrition that you should get.
That is exactly right, and it's funny. I learned not necessarily as well. When I was quite young, we made dinner for the friend that I was working with's father, who was a fairly fancy lawyer, but he was coming to her apartment, and she made something like, and I've probably told this story before, but she made, let's call it, chicken breasts and mashed potatoes and cauliflower. And she was really pleased, and she cooked, you know, she worked very hard to cook these because, you know, he was not the easiest person in the world anyway, anyhow. She puts the plate in front of him, and he said, okay, what's wrong with this? And she almost burst into tears. But the bottom line was, he was pointing out there was no color on the plate. It was absolutely monochrome.
Cauliflower at least provided some fiber. And chicken breast, boo. And what else?
Cauliflower and mashed potatoes.
Oh, mashed potatoes. Well, yummy, but
yummy, but not colorful.
No. She needed it.
But, however,
at the very least, she needed some peas.
However, that was the first time that I realized that color was a factor.
Yeah, color is a factor.
Yeah.
It is, for sure. And, you know, and what's wrong with that?
Nothing. Good.
No, I mean, I think that it appeals to our animal instinct, actually.
And it also connects to, you know, our eye.
Yeah, they always say you eat with your eyes before your taste buds or whatever. Was it? There used to be a saying like that.
It made worse is your eyes are bigger than your stomach.
That's another thing.
Yeah, we don't subscribe to that in this house. It's like, yeah, let's have thirds. Let's have thirds and family hold back was never one worse.
Anyway, it's that weather. I hope everybody's got at least something in the freezer they can braise. You know, chicken, those who don't eat red meat, I don't want you to feel left out. We braise chicken, too. And, in fact, there's a name for that in French cooking. They would say a chicken sauté. And it's more of a technique than it is a particular dish. And I can add in my Italian repertoire, a chicken cacciatore is, in fact, a braised chicken. It depends on where you are, what the hunters are putting in their pot. In Naples, they put in tomatoes and red peppers. But that's what it is. It's a braised chicken. You brown it in some fat, and then you add a liquid, and you cook it until it's fully cooked and tender. It's called braising.
And what would you do in northern Italy?
Well, they do the here's a northern braise that I adore, that I sometimes make, ossobuco.
Right.
Ossobuco is braised veal shank, and the shank is cut into slices, and it has that round bone in the middle, and that's what ossobuco means, whole bone with a hole.
Right.
So it's the marrow bone in the middle of the leg, and that is browned and then braised with usual carrot, onion, celery, some white wine. Could be with tomato, could be without tomato. I mean, there are a lot of different ways to do that, as there are, by the way, making a sauté of chicken. But, yeah, then you add your whatever the other flavoring is, and you let it simmer until the meat is really, really tender. because it's not tender meat to start. It's not meat you would want to put on the grill. So you have to cook it in that way to make it tender. And so that's a northern one. And here's one my grandfather used to make, because my grandfather's parents came from the far northeast of Italy, what is now northeast of Italy, but was Austro-Hungarian Empire at the time. And my grandfather used to make whole veal shanks, which I don't know where he bought them in Brooklyn, but he got them. I guess he went to an Italian butcher, probably. Whole veal shanks braised with anchovies. It was the usual mirepoix or baduto, whatever you want to call it, the carrot, onion, celery, with anchovies and white wine, and that's what you braised the shanks in. It was delicious. You never knew there was anchovies in it. Anyway, so that's the anchovy. I mean, let's do anchovies another day, because I sneak anchovies into a number of things and don't tell Bob Harnett.
Yeah, I understand. we can tell
so everybody have
stories.
A grazing week. And I look forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely. Thank you. We will talk next time. This has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch on Robin Hood Radio.